Hey, welcome back to the Entrepreneurs Podcast. We could not be more excited for today's episode.
Today, we are beyond lucky to have on Jane Hong, CEO of Paintbox, a third space for women and redefining the nail art experience, both in studio and at home.
Jane has an incredible story from her days at Princeton as an undergrad, studying public policy and at MIT for her MBA, to her experience on Wall Street, working at Nike and beyond, even as an awesome mom.
Get ready to hear about why Jane encourages all young female entrepreneurs to question why the idea of BS is actually BS itself, and the importance of chartering your own path. Hello, and welcome back to the podcast. We are so excited to have you today.
Thank you for having me. I'm honored to be here.
Absolutely. So we'd love to just get started by asking you, what excites you when you wake up in the morning?
Oh, that is a very good question. I would say what excites me when I wake up. Well, I'm not a morning person, so it's very hard to excite me in the morning. But usually my children get me up, and so I have to be up for all daily purposes. And so I would say what gets me excited, you know, is really just what's on the day ahead. And I say that because since joining Paintbox, you know, I have lost that sense of Sunday scaries. And, you know, once you graduate school, you will quickly see what Sunday scaries are, but it's essentially like the end of the weekend, and you know that you have a long work week ahead. And I think when you love what you do, you don't ever have that sensation of, oh, the weekend's over. I mean, of course, if you're on some Caribbean island for vacation, that's a little different, but I would say I haven't really ever experienced that sensation since joining Paintbox. And I think it's because, you know, it's very entrepreneurial. It's charting your own course. And I think, you know, healthfully or unhealthfully, the weekends, you can let those boundaries drop. And so you kind of are always moving forward, and that's good and bad. I think it's good because it's your business. And so when you stop, it kind of stops, but then of course everyone needs to establish some boundaries to make it healthy to have some time for respite. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. So for our audience who don't know you so well, could you give us a short little bio of who you are and what you do?
Yes. So I'm Jane Hong, and I am the CEO of Paintbox. And it was founded in the spring of 2014. And the founder was a beauty editorial expert, and saw the trends and rising trends of nail art. And so wanted to make it accessible, wanted to elevate the nail art experience, the nail experience generally, in New York City. So as she started this concept and idea, she realized, you know, she's a creative and needed a business partner to really grow and run the operations. And so she founded, you know, she stumbled upon me, and my background was very traditional to date. So, you know, I went to Princeton and I majored in politics and with a minor or certificate in Spanish. And then I lived abroad through Princeton in Latin America and worked for Endeavor Chile. Endeavor is a nonprofit headquartered in New York City that scours emerging markets for high impact entrepreneurs. And so that's where sort of my entrepreneurial itch sort of started. And then I went back to Wall Street, and I was working at Goldman Sachs on the rates desk and watching the world sort of crumble through the financial crisis. But I would say that was probably a very material experience for me because, you know, it taught me a ton about resilience and hard work. And if there was any like millennialism in me, it was shook right out because, you know, I think my bosses, they're the best mentors I have had in my life. And I still call upon them today. And nothing was lost on them. They knew when, you know, when to congratulate me. They knew when to thank me for my hard work, and they knew when to reprimand me for a mistake. So I learned so much about hard work in that role. And I, you know, perhaps it's the culture of Goldman, perhaps it's a culture of Wall Street, but you know, they really taught me a lot, and I'm very grateful for that experience. And so then I realized like finance wasn't necessarily where my passion was. I wanted something more tangible, wanted to pivot into retail, e-commerce. And so pursued my MBA at MIT Sloan, and then spent my summer at Nike, sort of the brand of all brands. And there I, you know, worked on a pricing strategy, strategic pricing framework for running footwear, the highest, the fastest growing geography for Nike. And then from there, went to Huge, which is a digital media agency based in Brooklyn. Wanted to come back to New York. Portland was amazing for a summer, but I didn't think full time it was going to work. And so, you know, came back here and worked on a variety of brands. I mean, it was also an incredible experience. But I think as I started thinking about family planning, I realized just sort of being on the client service side was really hard to really maintain that balance, especially in agency. And so I went to the client side and went to First Dibs. It's an online marketplace for furniture, fine art, jewelry, and fashion, and led the supply strategy side of the marketplace. So that's really where I met so many small business dealers, you know, antique dealers, makers, contemporary dealers, art galleries, you know, jewelers, and they were using this tech platform to help their business grow. And so that's where my passion to help businesses grow really came from, small businesses. And so when this opportunity to really lead and spearhead the growth of Paintbox came, I obviously jumped at the opportunity. And so here I am. And, you know, 4 years later, we did a capital raise. We expanded to the Upper East Side. We launched a new website. We launched e-commerce and our own product line and, of nail lacquer and nail care to come. And, so those are all really huge. Obviously the pandemic hit. And so things have shifted considerably, but I'm grateful for having pushed the envelope and gotten our e-commerce up and running in a time when everyone said, no, more experiences, more studios, more brick and mortar. This is so special. This is the wave of the future for brick and mortar. You're not big enough to go into e-commerce. And that's what everyone said to me. And it's really what carried the business through when we were forced to close our locations through the heart of the pandemic.
Wow. I don't even know where to begin with the amount of lessons and insights that I want to ask you from like your experience. You're like an absolute rock star. Wow. So clearly I think a theme that I hear is that you learned a lot along your way. You learned a lot of Goldman Sachs. You learned a lot while you were at Nike. You learned a lot while you were at MIT. Learned a lot with these people. So what is one lesson you wish you had learned earlier and why?
Good question. One lesson I wish I learned earlier. You know, I would say, I guess a lesson I wished earlier was don't be afraid to ask the question. And, you know, I think during the financial crisis, I was somewhat intimidated to ask questions because everyone was literally on the fritz, you know, they were on edge and they were witnessing things. My boss had been there for 25 years, had never witnessed market moves that way in 25 years. So you can imagine how I felt nervous to ask and just be curious all the time because it just felt like a stressful situation. I was, you know, too busy reading the room. And then, you know, at Nike, I think it was a similar thing. I remember when I started my project, they told me you're doing a strategic pricing framework for running footwear for emerging markets. And I, you know, I felt, oh, okay. But like, what is that? And, you know, I was nervous, like, you know, I'm new, I'm an MIT MBA summer intern. And so I didn't want to come across as like, oh, I don't know what that is, so I won't ask the question. And so, you know, it took me a little bit longer to warm up. Of course, the question ultimately was on me. You know, you define this, you figure it out. But I think I was, you know, I've always been a little bit gun shy on asking why early on. And now I ask why the moment somebody says something. And I think you learn so much from that. And it's not that I didn't have that question. It's more just the fear around asking that question. And so I would encourage all young people to question why with everything. And that comes down to your life professionally, but even personally. And, you know, in the movements of what we're seeing socially, you know, with social justice and all that, and the responses we're seeing, I encourage everyone to say why, and why to things that align with your views, and why to things that don't align with your views. And I think because nobody questions why these days, you know, people take what they read for fact or what they're told as fact. And I think it actually will lead to consequences more broadly if we're not teaching young people to be curious and to question these things more. So that's where I sort of went on a tangent, but yeah, I wish I had asked why earlier, faster.
I think that's so important, especially nowadays when like Google and like the internet is so accessible. Everyone's kind of like, it doesn't matter why, because I always have that resource. But it's exactly. So just for your curiosity to continue asking that.
You know, Google's not always right. Like, why do we just trust that it's always right? And so that's, you know, you go explore on your own to find out both sides of each argument and then make your own conclusion, you know, critically think. That's, and you only do that when you ask why.
This is like, yeah. You know, that Simon Sinek TED talk that's like, start with why.
Oh yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah. I had watched that when I was 22, it probably would have served me well.
Yeah, shifting gears slightly, I would love to learn how you went from studying politics at Princeton to like throwing yourself into entrepreneurship.
Yeah, you know, I think you know, Princeton is not a trade school by any means. It's a liberal arts program where I think it teaches you lifelong skills. Like I think, you know, in college you learn socialization skills. I think you learn, you learn from the best of the best professors. And I took courses across all subjects with the best in the field. So, you know, English courses or history courses, politics, econ, math, what have you, the whole range, art history, you're with the best of the best. So, you know, I felt like politics allowed me to critically think. It was a subject matter that was so relevant to like the world that we lived in then and now. I mean, it's current events. And you know, it was very macro. So I would say like I was on a macro desk at Goldman. I did Endeavor, which is a nonprofit for emerging markets. And I think all those things together actually facilitated my interest in what's going on in the world. Where are the opportunities? How can I make a difference, right? Those questions all kind of came from that subject matter. While it doesn't seem like direct, like finance major to finance or something like that, I thought of my education in college as very, you know, broad stroked. And I think it served me well because it made me think about all kinds of different opportunities and looking at each one individually. So yeah, that's how I kind of came to where I am.
So I'm curious to hear, what was your guiding why, your mission through all the amazing opportunities and endeavors that you've been on and even today? What is your why?
Yeah, so my why, I guess from the beginning was, you know, wanting new experiences and wanting challenging experiences. I think that's always been the why. So, you know, if you, and I think what, how it's evolved to today was, you know, every day is new in entrepreneurship. You know, it's uncharted territory. You're paving your own path. And so that curiosity and that challenge, you know, some days I'm like, I'm a masochist. Actually really behoove you to feel motivated day in and day out. So, you know, I think my why is the challenge and the pioneering, if you will, you know, of something that's completely new every day.
And so you do so many things across the board. How do you balance all of the different aspects of your life?
I think that if I'm allowed to say this, I think that balance is BS. And I say that because, you know, that's the jargon out there. That's the conversation, you know, work-life balance, women can have it all. And, you know, Anne Marie Slaughter, you know, she wrote that controversial Atlantic piece that said like women can't have it all. And I think by, you know, with the pandemic, it's been exacerbated because women are now virtual teachers. They're tech IT support because everyone needs IT support, all these kids, and you're figuring out all these tech platforms. They're chefs, full-time chefs. They are, you know, full-time housekeepers and full-time caretakers, and they're working as well, a professional job. And there's absolutely no balance in that. And so I think, you know, how do I find the balance? I have two small young children and you know, even people who don't have kids, you know, they're taking care of their parents because they're high risk, or, you know, the demands on our society are higher than they've ever been. But I think the balance of it all are the silver linings of COVID and working from home. And I would say that because I've gotten to know my children and their personalities in a way that some days I regret, but most days I'm excited to see that side of them, those little nuances through the day that I would have otherwise missed. And I think, you know, working from home, I think that they see how hard, you know, I work, and they appreciate it. I mean, my daughter's 5, my son's 2, so he's a little bit too young, but my daughter always is like, "Mommy, you work so hard." And she has this sort of role model and she knows it, but she also understands that my patience runs out too, you know, and so, you know, we have so many talks where, and if I'm short with her, I come back and I say, I'm really tired, or I'm spent, or, you know, it's been a long day. And she understands that because she has those emotions too. You know, when she's cranky, she's usually tired, and we can talk about it and she can identify that. And so I think, you know, I don't believe in balance. I think you have to pick and choose day by day what your focus is that day. And you have to balance it. You have to make an active effort to tip the scale. So if it's all work, you know, Monday through Saturday, you need Sunday to spend time with your family. And if you're not going to do it, then you're never going to have a balance. And so I think the balance is by you establishing boundaries on a daily basis. And, you know, I would say I fail at that more often than not, but it's an active practice you have to take on.
So what would you say to women or people nowadays who come home and they're home, but they're like on their phones, they're kind of listening, they're kind of at dinner, but kind of not. And they're like yourself, they're balancing a very demanding job, but they also have kids and they also have a personal life and they also enjoy going out. Like, how would you say, what is your piece of advice for them?
Yeah. I mean, that's a tough one, because I feel like I face that all the time, but, you know, I would say whenever you're trying to juggle 20 things at once, you end up kind of doing everything sort of mediocre. And the end result is you feel bad about it, especially if you're like a type A hardworking person, like I think, you know, most people I like to believe are. And so for me, what I've learned is I feel worse about the end product when I'm doing those sorts of things. So I've made it a rule that, you know, at a certain hour, I turn off my phone and I pick it back up after my kids are asleep. And that's when, you know, there's like a dinner hour and, you know, bedtime routine hour. And so that's when I'm committed to making time for my family. And then I pick it back up for work after that. And then I have moment to unwind for me. And then it's to sleep. So, you know, I we're all so tethered to our phones. It's awful. Paintbox does a stat in the newsletter. It was like before the pandemic, it was the average person touches their phone 2,500 times and a heavy user over 6,000 times. This is before pandemic. So I'm sure that stat is higher. And so, you know, we made a case for why you need to have pretty nails because you're always looking at your hands. But it was a very depressing stat at the time. I couldn't believe it was true, but it was actually, you know, based on a lot of research. And I would have to say, so we are tethered to our phones. And I grew up, you know, in a generation where there were no smartphones. So I worry about what messages it sends to my kids. So I try and actively, you know, put boundaries around it, but look, it's not easy. It's definitely hard when you're around it. And I don't know if any of you have seen that documentary, The Social Dilemma.
Oh my God. Don't even get me started. Yeah. I turn off all my notifications after that. I do not get anything from Instagram, Snapchat, like nothing, LinkedIn, Facebook, nothing.
I know. And you know, it's so true where they talk about the bubbles typing, how they developed that. And it is actually like something I'm like, oh, she's typing and I'll wait, you know, yeah. And it's too much. So I encourage everyone to, you know, throw their phones out the door at some point.
I love that. And that's such great advice to remember. Shifting gears slightly, I'm taking a class currently in our entrepreneurial department about failure and how we define failure in different sectors of our life. I would love to know more about how you define it and like how that definition has kind of changed throughout your journey.
Yes. So, you know, growing up, failure meant like, you know, getting a really bad grade on a test or, you know, missing the soccer goal at the end of the game, you know, hitting the goalpost, whatever. Failure meant a lot of those kinds of things. Obviously, I think we can all relate to that or forgetting, you know, I played the violin growing up and I remember in a final concert, I like blacked out, couldn't remember the next set of notes. You know, I was not using music to read. And I remember just freezing on stage. And so, you know, that in so many ways was a failure, but it continues through your professional career and failures mean making a mistake at work, getting in trouble at work because you made this mistake or this will happen to almost everyone, but sending an email to somebody that you shouldn't have, and et cetera, et cetera. And so I think for me, that was a really hard part of growing up. But now how failures evolved is, yes, those things will continue to happen. I'm going to continue to make mistakes. I'm a human. That being said, you know, failure has taken on a new shape and it's not failure if you learn from it. It's failure if you let it happen and black it out and move on. But I would say if you mess up, by all means mess up, but reflect on the mess up and learn from it. And it's not a failure at all. It's a learning. So, you know, I think failure still exists in a vacuum in the sense that, you know, if you don't really take the time to digest what happened, think about how you could do it differently next time, then yeah, it's a failure. It's a missed opportunity. But when you do take that time to really dissect what happened, what can I learn from it? How can I prevent it from happening again? How can I share this advice with somebody else? No, it's actually really an opportunity.
So what do you think personally, if you don't mind sharing, was your biggest failure? I say that in air quotes at the time, but in reality, it allowed you to adapt, innovate, think in a different way, change your model, your mindset. I'd love to hear about that.
Yeah. You know, I would say a big failure of mine that really helped me adapt was, you know, I once said something to a boss about how I disagreed. It was a very senior level boss, about how I disagreed with essentially the exec strategy. And that was really, you know, a tough thing to say to somebody, but I just felt like it was very short-term focused. So when I questioned it, you know, it didn't end well for me. You know, I think it was, you know, you, to some degree, when you get into a corporation, especially as it grows, and especially as you grow in your career, those kinds of comments are risks. And, you know, people want to, depending on your boss, and I would say most, want to have a yes man on the team, right? And so I really learned from that. And what I learned, though, was I'm not made for that world. I'm not made for a world in which I can just sit sort of complacently, play the game, and climb the corporate ladder. I'm actually made for a world where I'm surrounded by people who challenge what I do and ask me why I'm doing it. And I'm made for a world where I can steer my own path and set a strategy and develop it long-term. And so that really is what tipped me into just being like, I need to be an entrepreneur, full stop. Because while I loved certain, you know, past jobs I was in, I learned a ton from them. I think ultimately knowing, you know, challenging such an executive strategy is, I mean, it takes some gall to do, and doing it really opened my eyes to where I should be in my career and what I should pursue. Yeah,
for sure. That's something definitely all of us, I think, can keep more in mind as we go out of college soon and figure out our own careers. Yes. On a lighter note,
yep.
I would love to know more about like the next steps for Paintbox. You said that you started entering the e-commerce world and what that's been like.
Yeah, no, honestly, it's been wonderful. We just joined Neiman Marcus's dropship program. So you can find Paintbox at neimanmarcus.com. Talking to a few other wholesalers, it's been really tough because our logistics arm isn't necessarily set up for the wholesale model, but it's exciting to see. So check us out on neimans.com and of course on paintbox.com. But I would say the e-commerce, you know, it's been a wild ride. I think this year we're condensing the line a little bit just because, you know, the pandemic and whatnot, we have to be sort of conservative with working capital, but we're just continuing to push color theory, push the envelope with color combinations and really bringing nail art into your homes with the creation of the what we call the paint box and Manny nail art kit for at home and the creation of the art set. So yeah, I'm excited to scale paint box studio experience more broadly.
That is absolutely amazing. And I'm so excited to see where Paintbox goes in the future. And I can't wait to get a hold of it myself soon. Now, as we're slowly going to wrap up to the podcast, we have arguably our most important question to ask you. And that is, what's on your nails today? I'm embarrassed to say I've got nothing on my nails, but I feel like you must have a cool color, a cool combo at all times. So,
you know, that's so funny. I just pulled off my nail polish. It's terrible. I'm probably, you know, I'm like the dentist kid or the doctor's kid who never goes and sees a doctor. And, you know, I'll go through phases where I'm like religious about my manicures. But once you've had a Paintbox manicure in real life, like I can't really recreate it at home quite the same way. Artists are so talented. And so then it's really a matter of like finding the time to go in. But it's really important. You know, it's where I learn from the ground, you know, what the artists are seeing, how they're feeling, you know, what the studio buzz is like, what's the temperature, especially, you know, post-pandemic that's been a huge part of it. So I hope to get something cool tomorrow and I'll send you a picture.
Please do.
We can't wait to see it. And we always love to ask our guests, what is something that you're grateful for today?
Oh, I'm so grateful for my health. You know, without health, you've got nothing. So I'm grateful for a job and really for my health and my family's health. So that's what I'm grateful for. I think the list could go on and on, but if I have to choose that, that's what it would be.
Well, firstly, I'm really happy to hear that you and your family are doing well in your health. This is a crazy time for that. So huge amazingness for that. One of the other questions we love to ask our guests is, today, April 22nd, 2021, what is something that you love about yourself?
Oh, what is something I love about myself? I love my stamina. I would say, you know, I have a lot, I have a lot of energy and, you know, I think sometimes that's kind of inherent in you and I was born with it maybe. And I'm very grateful for it because the road is long in entrepreneurship and in life. And so you really want to have the endurance to last. So I'm grateful for that.
And if you could give one sentence about what it means to be an entrepreneur, what would that sentence be?
Being an entrepreneur means to me innovative and empathetic. And you've got to relate to your customers and your team. And so I think a little bit of both goes a long way.
If people want to find you after, if our audience wants to find you after, where can they find you and Paintbox?
My email is jhong@paint-box.com.
Thanks so much for tuning into the podcast today. I hope you were as inspired as we were by Jane and her story.
Be sure to check out our past and future episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you're listening to this podcast now. To stay updated with what's going on in the Entrepreneurs Podcast universe, join our community on Instagram, LinkedIn, and always feel free to reach out to share your entrepreneur story or someone you know.